You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay originally aired on September 25th, 1987.
This is the time of the year when a good share of our North American populations of birds, after building a reserve of energy, pick up stakes and move without baggage to wintering grounds at least a half continent distant. It's an interesting and mysterious ritual, although few people doubt its purpose, escaping the northern winter. Also mysterious to many is the fact that these same birds, most of them with no previous experience, can find their way back to the very place of their hatching. Even more mysterious is the explanation of how salmon and trout, running from Lake Ontario, even from the Atlantic or Pacific Oceans, can navigate rivers and tributaries and brooks and rills to the very stream where they spent their early months after hatching. In both of the aforementioned cases, quite a bit is now known, but a part of the mystery persists. For instance, it's quite clear from research that birds are able to predicate the direction of their migratory flight by the orientation of the sun and of the heavenly bodies, celestial navigation. This we know. Still, we can't completely explain how a hen pintail can in her first winter move south, winter in Louisiana, for instance, and then return the next spring to nest within 100 yards of her natal nest. By celestial navigation alone, we're right, I believe, to presume that something more is involved. That innate ability of the salmon to seek out its natal stream in an aqueous medium that seems the same throughout its to us is mysterious to the nth degree. Research seems to demonstrate here that the fish is particularly gifted with chemical sensors that allow it to follow an increasing concentration of the unique chemistry of its natal stream, from almost complete dilution in the great rivers to just the proper combination in some spring run. Intriguing to think of a fish smelling its way home. But again, we have every right to suspect that there are mysteries there still unexplained. Incidentally, be sure to put that word smelling in quotes, because we're not talking here simply of aroma, but of something more selective. This whole subject of detection and response to environment is a fascinating one, akin more often than not to the phenomena we observe in migration. How, for instance, can the monarch butterfly complete a migration to and from Mexico, which requires more than one generation to complete? How is the information about the location of the ancestral homeland passed to succeeding offspring? No parental training or example exists. What follows is not intended to provide any answers to the questions above, but does attempt to point out some of the truly remarkable mechanisms of detection, orientation, and communication that exist in nature. The honeybee certainly uses chemistry, sight, celestial orientation, and other senses to locate food sources. It then returns to the hive and communicates effectively type of food, distance, and direction of food sources. This message is all contained in a little dance which the bee performs before interested colleagues. Distance to a pollen or nectar source varies inversely with the speed of the dance. Direction is indicated with respect to the sun by the angle from the vertical of the center line of the dance. Meanwhile, the workers are picking up from the hairy body of the bee a chemical description of the plant and flower. The bat locates its prey even in complete darkness by echo orientation. Its mechanism is a series of high-pitched sounds bounced off objects in the environment, and its ability to select those which represent either danger or food sources. Ears are important in orientation to some creatures. There seems to be in insects, for instance, a direct correlation between the ability to detect sound and the ability to create it. Most notable to us, perhaps, are those members of the grasshopper cricket family which provide a great part of our summer night sounds hereabouts. This is mostly communication between the sexes to attract females and between males for rallying. Quite similar to frogs and toads, but with frogs and toads, the song is vocal. With crickets and grasshoppers, it's mechanical, made by rubbing together of wings and body. Frogs hear with conventional ears. Insects have vibrating membranes on thorax or abdomen. Fish that inhabit the profundal depths of oceans often use bioluminescence to communicate. It's interesting to think that here in the eternal darkness, the fish and other creatures carry with them floodlights, warning signals, jack lights, and even signature lights, whose pattern and frequency is at least species-specific. And so it goes. A variety of modifications specially designed so that insects, amphibians, birds, or mammals can communicate. One wonders, however, how the creatures can know by instinct both style and sequence and exquisite timing. Well, that's all I have for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week and keep it natural.